This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Lonely Planet just got a little less lonely with Chris Zaya on Joy Drive.
Chris Zaya?
Warren.
I can hear you. How are you?
I'm really well. We haven't seen each other in eons.
Years.
Years even.
It's been years. And I tell you what, every time I see you and I say to you, Chris, where have you been traveling? And you roll off so many destinations. But I notice you don't ask me anymore.
Because I know you've been behind the desk.
I've been behind the desk nonstop. But I want to ask you, Chris, where should we be thinking about traveling to next?
So I've plucked out three destinations that are maybe a little bit unexpected. Some of them are really close to home.
Right.
Some of them are cost effective, and one of them is just an out of the box surprise, and one of the my favorite places that I've ever been anywhere in the entire world.
Oh my God.
And they all feature in Lonely Planet's Best in Travel 2026. So I thought it was really appropriate to bring these all to the table.
All right, so let's kick off close to home, because this one might tempt people to book something the moment they get home tonight.
Absolutely. And the reason being is it's New Zealand's North Island. Mm-hmm. And the big reason for Aussies at the moment is we're at a 12-year high with the Aussie dollar exchange rate to the New Zealand dollar. So your money's actually going a lot further than it has been in the... And New Zealand is a slightly more expensive destination. So if you're getting a better exchange rate, it's really kind of one to kind of consider. And the North Island in particular is... The South Island is really spectacular because it's got the fjords and, you know, Milford Sound and all that sort
beautiful
of stuff. The North Island, I actually think, has a greater variety of things that you can actually do, and it's less trafficked. So you can go right up the top to the beautiful beautiful Northland, where in Maori legend there's a peninsula where your spirit leaves the it's really beautiful.
I love that spiritual stuff.
The Bay of Islands is absolutely spectacular, or that's also in the far north. And then you can go right down to a place called the Wairarapa. And the Wairarapa is an amazing kind of boutique wine region. You will see seal colonies and all sorts of things down that route. And that's not a hard drive from a place like Wellington. So you've got cities, you've got these interesting kind of like regional areas, and it's kind of a top to bottom thing that you can do. And, you know, hire a van or hire a car and
drive around.
And actually, this is the best way to experience it.
I've only visited the South Island for the
lot of people do. A lot of Aussies actually opt for the South Island. They'll either fly into Christchurch or they'll fly into Auckland, and then they'll kind of make their way down. But I'm actually a real fan of the North Island. I think it's got a real variety to it that is unexpected, and again, because it's less trafficked, you're getting a little bit more of a genuine experience. And then there's this huge benefit of the exchange rate being so good at the moment.
Is it just me, or when you're driving in New Zealand you sort of slightly pull to the left and people pass you? Does that still happen?
And New Zealand is a little bit like when you're driving in Tasmania. You look at a map and you go, "Oh, that should take me."
Oh my goodness!
That should take me like an hour and a half, right? But what ends up going is like that's actually a 4-hour drive because it's windy, windy, wendy. So.
Oh my goodness! I've been caught out so many times.
I know. So that is Tasmania. Just one thing is to kind of like if it looks like it's a 3-hour travel time, you might want to bake in a couple of extra hours.
What about in Auckland? How much time do you reckon we should spend in Auckland?
So Auckland's a funny one because it's a city that's still undergoing a lot of construction at the moment. So I find Auckland can be a really good kind of like day venture. What I would advise is hopping over to Waiheke Island off of Auckland, which is a 45-minute ferry ride from downtown Auckland, and then you're on an island that has 35 different wineries, and it's got its own little microclimate. So it is very specific for growing certain varietals of wine. It's a big foodie place as well. It's got a kind of like a fairly bohemian culture, so it's got lots of like arts communities. That one is really fun. So
you taste all your wines, then hop on a rocky boat on the way home.
It's the bay. So it's okay.
It's okay.
There is so much to do, and I think once you get involved in somewhere like the North Island, mm-hmm. It kind of gets under your skin and you're kind of like, I'd like to stay here a little bit longer and explore more widely.
I love it. Now, from road trips to one of the happiest, calmest, most soothing places on the planet, where are we going to next, Chris Zaya?
So I've actually just come back from there. And it's Finland. So Finland is stunning. It's mm-hmm. beautiful. The Nordics are expensive, but the good thing for Aussies with Finland is on the euro. So your exchange rate is a little bit better rather than you being on the Swedish SEK or the mm-hmm. Danish krona or the Norwegian, I've forgotten the currency in Norway, but they're all you're terribly expensive. Right. So you're getting your Nordic experience, but on a slightly better budget.
Okay.
What I love particularly about Helsinki as a city is it reminds me a lot of Melbourne.
Oh.
So it's a port city. So it's based on the water. You've got a lot of tram systems in the inner city that kind of direct you around. It's very design-led. So it's got a lot of arts, culture, design shops. It's very beautiful. And it's an all year rounder. So like you can go in summer, you can go in winter, and you're going to have all these really interesting experiences.
I've never been there, but you're selling it to me. Really.
I love it. I also love the fact that as you go further and further up, it changes again and again and again because you're getting this much more, I suppose, a deeper experience with it. And you can go right up to, I'm going to butcher this name, so it's Rovaniemi, which is where you have, towards Lapland, where that's kind of where Santa's workshop and all those bits and pieces are. There's a whole Christmas world up
what
there.
What would you say to Santa?
Santa, can I sit on your lap? I'm a little old and a little big for that.
Let me do it.
But yeah, I really enjoy Finland. I think Finland is one of those destinations where the people are really generous as well. And if you want to do some experimental food stuff, I can highly recommend a reindeer burger or a reindeer hot dog.
Yum.
Oh my God. Like they do it with like a horseradish cream and it's just like mouth-wateringly good. You go down to the harbour in Helsinki, there's a whole like food hall there with all sorts of various different iterations. But also if you're into things like salmon, really beautiful, like this fresh fish and cured fishes. I find it really, really yummy as well as really interesting.
Horseradish. I haven't had it for ages.
I know, but I put like once it gets in your head, I need some for
that
tonight.
That sinus clearing effect that it has. We're in studio with Chris Zaya from Lonely Planet talking us through three destinations that we should be thinking about for 2026. Finland also tops the UN happiness report every year. Why is that?
I think there is just, if you've ever had a sauna in Finland, where you have to do the whipping of your flesh with the birch, of the birch trees. So you basically go into
you go into a
swimming hall or a pool. Sometimes they're mixed, sometimes they're same sex only in terms mm-hmm. of the way that they function. You often are in a room with a lot of other individuals, and there's kind of these buckets that sit in the corner with the big twigs and the big branches. And so as you get out of the sauna, you kind of like pat your skin down to kind of open all your pores.
Oh.
And then you jump in the freezing cold pool or the freezing cold ocean if you're by a lake if you're by one of the kind of outdoor saunas. And I have to say, your body becomes alive.
Oh,
it's
really?
Electric. It tingles. It's just the absolutely the most beautiful thing. And sauna is part of their, it's just part of their culture. So it really is very interesting. So I have to say there is something about taking care of the body, which actually leads to that inner happiness, which is part of it, which you don't quite comprehend till you are there and you're doing it with them.
As I'm sitting here, having ridden in here, feeling exhausted.
Sweaty Betty.
Thinking, I would love that. That'd be so good at the moment, to go into sauna and then the cold water.
It is just a beautiful experience. It's a really interesting experience. The other thing too is that the places that I've picked for this list are very LGBTQIA+ friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And have some of the most progressive laws anywhere in the world. So, I want to make sure that we're being looked after as well.
Fantastic. Chris, saunas, reindeer burgers to something totally different,
totally
a destination
different.
A lot of us might never have considered. I'm excited by this one. Tell us about it.
It's one of my favorite places I've ever visited anywhere in the entire world, mm. and it's Botswana in Africa. And the reason that I love it, first of all, yes, it's progressive for LGBT rights in a sense of it's progressive for Africa. It does feel quite safe when you're there. Myself and my partner were really looked after in the camp that we kind of stayed in. What I love about Botswana is it's all about the sustainability of the experience, not only for the individuals, but for the animals that you're seeing there. So if you're wanting to do a safari that is ethical and sustainable, then Botswana is definitely the place to do it. I'd highly recommend doing your research on finding a camp that potentially is away from some of the national parks and on a private reserve, because what you're going to end up seeing is animals that aren't used to humans. So you'll be actually seeing them in a very in their as natural a reaction than you would where they're in their national park and they're seeing this kind of trucks and vans and things all the time.
And don't go up and pat them.
No, you will very rarely be able to get off of the safari cars, because you're basically at the instruction of the people that are driving the cars. I would also highly recommend that you go towards the end of the dry season. And the reason being is you might not see the most spectacular scenery, but the animals all clamber towards the pans.
They're thirsty and hungry.
They're thirsty and there's hardly any water left in the pans, and they risk their lives to basically take a drink. So you'll see jackal with hyena, with lion, with like giraffes or with elephant all clambering around these water holes trying to get a drink. So it is breathtaking, it's spectacular, and it is one of those experiences that I'm very pleased to have done in my life. So if you're in a position to be able to think about being able to afford something like that, and that's something that, that is on your kind of bucket list, Botswana is the place to do it.
Many years ago, I went to Zimbabwe and did a safari, which I loved. And the thing I loved about it is we were camping out there and they cooked a local dish. Do you get that sort of experience?
Yeah, you absolutely do. And what I also love about the many of these smaller camps will actually rely on local villagers. So what they'll do is they'll hire all of the staff from the local villagers, but they'll also teach them how to grow the vegetables and things that are required for the camps. But then they're also buying those vegetables directly off the camp. So it becomes this really cyclical, sustainable way of actually traveling. So they're not only employing, but they're actually funding these people in terms of buying produce off of them as well. It's really very good. But again, do your research, make sure you're picking one of these camps that has one of these ethical stamps to them.
Chris Sire, I want to go.
I know. It's just, I actually, now we're just talking about it, I want to go back. Oh. We got chased by a hippopotamus.
Oh, did you?
On the Chobe River. I've never been more terrified in my life.
So it actually chased you?
Yeah, we got too close. The guy that was our guide got too close to a family, and it had some youngsters.
Oh, it was protecting its young.
So it was protecting its young, and he knew that he'd kind of screwed up. And when you see someone with a terrified face that's supposed to be protecting you and is like, we have to get out of here. And the hippo kind of went under the water and was like coming at the boat. And
my
partner Michael and I were like, okay, this is where we die. So it was
disappeared.
Slightly terrifying. Yeah, under the water. And you knew that our guide had this terrified look on his face. And I was like, this is not good. This is Final Destination stuff.
Oh my God. Chris, we'll be booking our trip there tonight. That sounds fantastic.
But, you know, that aside, like it is, you know, and that's part of the joy. Maybe joy is maybe the wrong word, but part of the full total experience is that, you know, these are literally wild animals that could kill you.
I wonder if you felt at the end of that, whether as good as you did after the sauna and the cold water, whether it woke you up.
As exhilarated. Yeah. My other one that I loved was when in the camp that we were staying in, it's all on suspended, all the huts have got suspended walkways, and there was a electric fence all around the camp, and we're like, that's fine. You've got alarms in your room too, if anything kind of gets into your room. Goodness. And we heard hyenas on the first night, and they were really close. So I was like, oh Lord, that was really, really close. And so on the last night, on the day that we're leaving, we said, oh, you know, those hyenas were close and we're so glad for the electric fences. The guy that was running the camp went, oh, you know, they just keep the elephants out. Everything else gets in.
Oh, Chris Zyre, good to chat with you. We'll see you again next time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Warren.
Chris Zyre from Lonely Planet on Drive.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.